Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code SPOTIFY for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Yo, what's up? Welcome to Kinda Funny Games Daily for Tuesday, July 12th, 2022. I'm one of your hosts, Blessing Adeoye Jr. Joining me is the force that is Gary Whitta.
Good morning, Blessing. How are you, sir?
Gary, I'm doing very good this morning. We were just talking about breakfast foods, and you asked me what my favorite breakfast was, but I didn't get to ask you that. What is your favorite go-to breakfast?
I mean, I'm English, so for me, it would be your what we call the classic full English breakfast, which is similar to what you think of as like an American breakfast, you know, bacon, sausage, eggs, that kind of stuff. But like, but proper sausage and proper bacon, not the little wizened
things like
that you get here that you call sausage and bacon, but like big giant sausages and thick, rich bacon.
I say, when you say proper bacon, do you just mean ham? Is it just ham?
No, like what kind of European bacon looks like, which is like bacon that looks like it hasn't been put through some kind of dehydrating shrinking machine, like just like actual bacon. Though. And, you know, and then, you know, maybe some toast, fried mushrooms, baked beans. Never been a big fried tomato fan. But, you know, just gonna get some potatoes on there, maybe some hash browns. But basically kind of sausage, bacon, and egg are kind of the
bacon
three
crispy?
Cornerstones. What's that?
I've never had, like, European bacon. Is it crispy when it's finished? Or is
it I mean, it depends. If you want to cook it crispy, you can. But it's not crispy, like, default, like American bacon is. I've tried when I first came out to America and I tried American bacon and I bit off a piece and it just kind of like snapped off. I'm like, what the hell is this? Like, bacon's supposed to be chewy, supposed to have a little bit of texture to it. I mean, it depends on how you like your bacon. Some people do like it burnt to a crisp.
It's just not my style. I like it crispy on the outside, a bit more floppy toward the inside.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I feel like that is like the perfect bacon. I need a little bit of both. I need it to melt in my mouth.
Would this be wrong? The one that I've clicked there.
Did you put up a picture of something?
Oh yes, I'm sharing it in the shared screen.
Oh yeah,
this looks
kind of.
Wait, you're saying this is your bacon?
Well, I mean, like this image I'm looking at is not great. What did you Google? Try googling English bacon.
I googled European.
Google full English breakfast.
I need to see pictures of
and this sort of, and I'll point you towards
now,
one that
Gary,
I think
I've always wanted to ask you this, and I might have because I have a tendency.
Okay, that first one there. That's not bad. Now you've got some black pudding there, you've got baked beans, you've got some good thick bacon, substantial bacon, you've got fried tomatoes, you've got some fried mushrooms. The only thing missing, you've got toast.
What's that on the bottom?
I would do fried bread. What's that?
What's that on the bottom left?
Bless. It's very
bottom
good.
Left. That's black pudding.
It's very good. It's better not to know much about it.
Okay. I'm going to trust you guys.
Yeah, you would call, I think Americans call that blood sausage.
Mm-hmm. They do. Now, you see what I mean? Bless. It's very good. Let me tell you.
But it is essentially congealed blood that's been deep fried.
Is it bloody sausage? I don't know if I can do.
No, it's literally congealed blood.
Yeah,
it's formed into a sausage shape, and then you fry it in a pan.
Here's the thing, right? I really like Filipino food. Yeah, they have a lot.
I love to go to Jollibee whenever I can.
God, we gotta talk about Jollibee. But before we do, right? Like, there's a dish at one of the local spots I go to. I think it's called. Oh man, the Filipinos are gonna hate me. I think it's called like Dingguan, something along those lines. It's very bloody. Is what I'll say.
Mm-hmm. Okay,
it's black.
Yes, right? It's like black, very like liquidy. It's a different kind of texture, but I dig it. But like, I can't think about it. I can't think about the fact that it's like blood. Dinuguan is what.
I'll give you my two other favorite breakfasts, and they're both kind of like regional things. One is I really do like huevos rancheros. A good plate of huevos rancheros is very, very good for breakfast. And when I went to Hawaii on vacation, I went to Hawaii for the first time ever a few years ago, I discovered what is actually my favorite breakfast, which is they have a thing there called Loco Moco. Have you ever had that?
Oh, yeah.
Love yes. a Loco Moco.
Loco Moco is incredible.
Oh, my God. That, to me, is the ultimate breakfast. They're living in the year 3000 in Hawaii. They're so far ahead of us.
Gary, what would you say is your favorite cuisine?
Like you had probably Indian food. I love Indian food. Mm. Yeah.
That's such a tough one for me.
What would you say?
I can name like five countries off the top of my head, and I don't even know which I would put at top. Because like Filipino food is up there. Nigerian food, of course, because I'm Nigerian, and like jollof rice is the best kind of rice you can ever get.
Mm-hmm.
I do like Hawaiian. I do like Hawaiian cuisine.
I had Hawaiian barbecue for lunch yesterday. It is good.
It's really good.
I love their unapologetic embrace of spam. Like they just like it's all about spam.
It's everywhere. I love it.
Yeah. Yeah.
Japanese is probably out there.
Japanese food's very good.
Yeah. I mean the whole continent of Asia just has fantastic food. And so you know what? If I can just include that all is like a bulk answer.
Have you guys had traditional Japanese breakfast?
What does that entail?
I mean what I got was like
isn't it like a bento kind of thing when you get Japanese breakfast?
Kind of, but it's got like often it'll have like fish, some pickled vegetables that I didn't recognize, a little bit of rice. It's kind of like a mixed bag of stuff.
Once the pandemic is fully over and our youngest is old enough to travel with, I really want to go to Asia. I've never been anywhere in Asia, and I really want to go. I'm thinking like somewhere like Singapore, because I watch these kind of food videos on YouTube, and I watch like these kind of like night market, you know, these street markets that they have, where it's like every kind of food imaginable. It just looks so good. I want to go to these like night markets and just devour everything from all the different food carts.
Well, Gary, if you remember, like at the start of the pandemic, right before the pandemic really hit, we were planning to go to, I believe, Japan for Super Nintendo World.
Like, I know. Well, I mean,
in the beginning stages of making that plan.
That's right. And of course, now they're actually, you know, they are finally building the American version of Super Nintendo World. I think that kind of funny trip. I mean, it's inevitable, right? It's only a matter of time, sure.
Oh yeah. I mean, it's content, right? Like, I feel like we have to review
it pays for itself.
Super Nintendo World.
The kind of funny gang goes to Super Nintendo World. That'll be your biggest video ever.
Oh my God, 100%. Gary, enough about Super Nintendo World. Enough about all the cuisine that we're into, even though I can talk to you about this all day. Let's talk about some news stories. Mm. Today's stories include a new Kirby game just got announced. Speaking of cuisine, Last of Us 1 has gone gold, only took 10 years, and more because this is Kind of Funny Games Daily. Each and every weekday at 10 a.m. live right here on twitch.tv/kindoffunnygames. We run you through the nerdy news you need to know about. If you're watching live, you can correct us when we get stuff wrong by going to kindoffunny.com/you'rewrong. If you don't want to watch live, you can watch later on youtube.com/kindoffunnygames, roosterteeth.com, or you can listen later on podcast services around the globe by searching for Kind of Funny Games Daily. Remember, you can use that creator code Kind of Funny on all Epic Store and Epic in-game purchases like Rocket League and Fortnite to help support the channel. To be a part of the show, to patreon.com/kindoffunnygames, or bronze members or above, get to write in, and silver members or above, get the show ad-free with the exclusive daily post show. Housekeeping for you, shout out to Prime Gaming for sponsoring our streams. To celebrate Prime Day, you can start freeloading over 30 games with Prime Gaming for Prime Day 2022. And then you'll also be able to claim additional games on Prime Day, July 12th and July 13th, which will include AAA titles like Mass Effect Legendary Edition, Grid Legends, Need for Speed Heat, and Star Wars Jedi Knight Jedi Academy, Star Wars Jedi Knight 2 Jedi Outcast, and Star Wars Republic Commando. So check out the link in the description to start freeloading games now. And then come party with Greg, Joey, and Snowbike Mike and Xbox this Friday in LA. We're taking over the Fonda Theater in Hollywood for the As Dusk Falls launch event, and you have to be there. You can RSVP now at kindoffunny.com/Xbox. Thank you to our Patreon producers, Fargo Brady, Gordon McGuire, and Al Tribesman. Today we're brought to you by ExpressVPN, MeUndies, and Athletic Greens, but we'll tell you about that later. For now, let's begin with what is and forever will be the Roper Report. It's time for some news. We have five stories today.
A baker's dozen.
Starting with our number one. You thought Kirby and the Forgotten Land was it. Well, guess what? You're wrong. Nintendo's announced a brand new Kirby game. This comes from Emma Roth at The Verge. Kirby's getting yet another Switch game. This time, it's a four-player competition to see who can gobble up the most strawberries. The trailer for Kirby's Dream Buffet has Kirby and friends rolling across food-themed obstacle courses while shape-shifting into desserts like a cupcake or chocolate bar that grant him different powers. Kirby's Dream Buffet looks kind of like a Super Monkey Ball. Only Dream Buffet swaps bananas for strawberries and a plastic ball for, well, Kirby. As the four players consume more strawberries, they grow bigger to prepare for what Nintendo describes as a final fruity fight atop a floating platform. At the end of the trailer, Kirby and his three blue, green, and yellow companions plop down on food scales to see who managed to eat the most. The largest Kirby crushes the scale and takes away the winning ribbon as Kirby's other friends appear to watch in satisfaction at what Kirby has accomplished. Nintendo says the game's arriving on the Switch this summer, but hasn't specified a date or pricing. The game will let you play with up to four friends locally or online. Gary, were you able to check out the trailer for this one this morning?
Yeah, I saw it this morning, and I instantly became super excited about it. I think it looks like a lot of fun. The vibe that I got from it, because, you know, in our house, we're always looking, like, we love Mario Party and stuff like that. We're always looking for things that you can play, like, 3-4 players that we can play as a family, and I think this will be perfect. We love Kirby. It's all food-themed. You know, all the levels look really delicious. The food-themed maps in, like, Mario Party and Mario Kart are always my favorite ones. They always make me hungry when I play those levels.
You play the cake map in the last Mario Party?
Right. Yeah, like Peach's birthday cake. And yeah. I don't know, the vibe I'm getting from this almost kind of feels like a little bit like Mario Party, almost weirdly like a little bit Fall Guys, but like just for four players, like different obstacle courses and mini games and stuff. I don't know. It looks like it could be a lot of fun.
Yeah, you know, you mentioned Fall Guys. That was my first media thought when I watched the trailer. When you get later on in the trailer, when they start showing gameplay, you have like a floating obstacle course that looks a lot like a Fall Guys.
Absolutely, right? Yeah.
Yeah, and like art style wise, I think it fits Kirby well. And God, can we just talk about how cute Kirby is? Just as a character,
Kirby, and this is like almost like a little shrunk down baby Kirby, right? Because it looks like he gets hit almost by like a shrink ray or something, right? He's like staring at this birthday cake or this giant cake and going, ooh. And then he gets hit and shrunk down and turned into like a little baby version.
Kevin, are you able to rewind back to like, it's somewhere in the first third of the trailer where Kirby is making the cutest facial expression I've ever seen.
Oh, yeah. Right here.
Like a few seconds forward.
Right there. Look at that.
God damn. Look at this guy.
That's pure Kirby porn.
Like how, in the year of 2022, how can somebody not love Kirby? Like, look at this. You gotta rep the set right here, Gary.
Look at you.
Right now, my apartment is filled with Kirby balloons. Cause like I love Kirby, obviously. But who loves Kirby even more than I do is Michael Higham. Michael Higham is fucking obsessed with Kirby nowadays. It's his birthday this week. And for his birthday, his girlfriend hit me up and was like, yo, I want to deck out the apartment in Kirby decorations. And so like I blew up a bunch of Kirby balloons that she sent over. I put up like some Kirby stickers all over the place. I have like a Kirby, basically a happy birthday ribbon set up in the kitchen. And let me tell you, man, Kirby aesthetically is fucking immaculate. Fucking love Kirby.
Kirby has always been great, I think, aesthetically, and always done into like, you know, go back to like Epic Yarn, and you know, there's always been a really cool vibe. The most recent game, you remember, you all laughed at me, I remind you, Blessing, when I picked Kirby in the Forgotten Land in the draft. You all laughed at me. Who's laughing now?
You're 100% right. And that's what I'm saying. 2022 is the year of Kirby, because I would never have imagined a Kirby release being up there for game of the year status in terms of the
I think you know, look, Elden Ring's gonna clean up and maybe Ragnarok as well, but Elden Ring right now I think is nailed on for game of the year. But I think that I really hope that, especially since it came out earlier in the year, I really hope that Kirby doesn't get forgotten in the conversation, because Kirby and Forgotten Land, like everyone who plays it, remember like Andy Cortez, right, kind of slept on it and then played it. It was like, oh my god, what is this game? Like he was like blown away by it. So I think anyone who's played it knows it's something special. Kirby games, I think, often get slept on because Kirby's not considered like a tier one, you know, Nintendo character like Mario and the Zelda games. But Forgotten Land's incredible. And I really do like the look of this as well. I mean, it'd be interesting to see what they do. If all it says is download on Nintendo eShop, which makes me think maybe there's no physical version. What if it's free? I mean, there's some things that still need to be resolved here. I don't think it's going to be a thing that's only available through like your Switch Online membership or anything. But speaking of that, I will be interested to see if there's like, is it couch play only? Is there going to be some kind of
online?
I mean, they could do like Battle Royale Fall Guys type stuff with it. There's a lot we don't know right now.
Yeah, the vibe I get from it is I assume it's going to be an eShop only game. I assume it's going to be what, maybe $20 to play, and they gotta have online in there for this kind of game. Like if they don't have online, I think that'll be a huge miss. I would think that the great way to do this would be to put it up for free if you have Nintendo Switch Online, the membership.
I mean, they've done that before, right, with Tetris 99 and all kinds of other games, but it remains to be seen. What was interesting to me was it said summer, right? It's summer now, which means it can't be far away. They almost kind of shadow dropped this, right? It kind of came out of nowhere.
Yeah, and they've done this before with like the weird Kirby offshoot games. Like I remember those, like a Kirby fighting game. I think it might have been called Kirby Fighters or something along those lines, where they just announced it out of nowhere, and they're basically like, "And it's out now, or it's out this fall." I can't remember what they said, but it was a very imminent release. It seems like for them, Kirby is very much a test bed for, "Hey, we got a cute little idea that we want to see through. Let's put this thing out, see how it hits, and then maybe if it hits, they either spin it into a bigger thing or use the idea for another game, or you know, maybe they just leave it and they go, hey, this is just us getting our creativity out." I like the fact that they're able to do that with IPs like Kirby, and even like with other things they do in different ranges. With Pokemon, you had like Pokken and other weird, you have a lot of weird iterations of Pokemon, right? And I know a lot of that is Pokemon Company, but then even with Mario, you have so many different iterations when you're talking about Mario Kart, Mario Party, Mario Maker, right? Like you have a lot that you do with that. Kirby, it seems like they kind of want to get that going, but they do it on a lot smaller scale, because Kirby is, like you mentioned, not on the same level as a Mario or a Zelda. So you have to kind of approach it with, all right, what makes sense for how we treat the IP of Kirby? But again, talking about Kirby in 2022, you know, Kirby, we don't see as an Animal Crossing, we don't see as a Mario, et cetera, et cetera. Do you think we'll get there at some point? Do you think there's a chance that Kirby could ascend and be talked about as a top tier Nintendo franchise?
I mean, I think, you know, this year, right? As I think you've got to say, this is probably the best year that Kirby's had in a long time, right? Between Forgotten Land and potentially this, if this is a banger as well, two great Kirby games in 1 year, and one of them, at least we know, is a legitimate Game of the Year, at least shortlisted, right? At least any shortlist for Game of the Year that is like worth its salt at all this year should have Kirby on it, because it really is that good. And I just keep thinking, it's interesting. People have said to me before, like they feel like Fall Guys is a game that Nintendo would have made, right? Because it's very cute,
yeah,
and it's a lot of, and it's just purely fun, right? And it's suitable for all ages. And Fall Guys right now is bigger than it's ever been, right? Since it went free to play, I think they said like 50 million players. Like it's huge. It's bigger than it's ever been. And obviously this isn't a reaction to that, because it's way, way, way too soon for that. But I just wonder if Nintendo hasn't been thinking if there is like space for a Fall Guys type game in their lineup. And if Nintendo were to have made Fall Guys, right? Imagine that we're in an alternate timeline where Fall Guys was a Nintendo game, but it was applied to an existing Nintendo franchise. Feels like Kirby is probably the one that would have been the best fit. And what we're seeing here with this game kind of feels like that's halfway towards this, right? It feels very Fall Guys. That's game. We won't know until we get a better look at the gameplay. But I saw things that looked like races. I saw things that looked more like obstacle courses, like different types of rounds. There's a lot of kind of Fall Guys boxes that are getting checked here. And if it were to be free, I mean, I'm not necessarily saying it would be, but if it were to be free to play, and if it is, it's only going to be through Nintendo Switch Online. It's not going to be completely free. You'll be paying for it one way or another through your Switch membership, or you know, maybe it's a cheap download or whatever, and there is some kind of online component. I don't know. I feel like it could potentially be really big.
Yeah, I mean, what you just described sounds like a hit, honestly. And
right.
You know, I look at Nintendo, and I'm sure somebody at Nintendo might be considering that. Might be considering, hey, what if we were to enter into the battle royale space in a little bit of a bigger way? Because they've dipped into it with things like Tetris 99 and
Mario 35
games, yep, right? And the Pac-Man one as
Pac-Man 99. Yeah, I mean, they love the battle royale space right now. And I mean, the one thing that I think Nintendo never really does is like overtly copy other people's hits. Like, oh, here comes Nintendo with their latest, like they're copying Fall Guys now or whatever hit. Like they usually make the hits and other people follow. But you know, that space, you know, that battle royale space that isn't predicated on, you know, just running around shooting people in an ever closing ring. That's one of the things that's most amazed me about. And I was totally wrong on this. When like PUBG and Fortnite and battle royale started like popping off, I remember thinking like, it's a great concept and it's revolutionized the way we think about shooters. But like, is this something that's really going to stick around? It never occurred to me that the battle royale, just basically that simple kind of like 60 to 100 players, and within one game you eliminate it down to one champion. That's basically the battle royale format. Would be so flexible, right? It works brilliantly for Tetris. It works brilliantly for Pac-Man. It works brilliantly for Mario. You know, with a little bit of thought, it seems like you can apply that single elimination format to almost any kind of gameplay. And I just feel like, I don't know, we're probably getting ahead of ourselves here. There's nothing really in that reveal to suggest that there is any battle royale, that there is any major online. It just could just be like a fun little four-player party game. But even on that basis, it would be a lot of fun.
Yeah, like, this game looks fun. I can't wait to try it out. And as I watch the trailer, it's not something that I think I'm going to play long term. I don't know if this is going to have the sticking power that something like Kirby and the Forgotten Land did. I think this is going to be let's hop into it, see if it's cool. Oh, okay, seems fun.
And then
go on to the next thing.
I think that if you're in a, it depends what kind of household you're in. If you're in a household where there's a bunch of people, let's say you live with a bunch of roommates, or you've got your family, you know, and you've got people in your house that can all sit around on a couch and like fill a four player lobby. That's where the richness of these games works best. Mm-hmm. I think you know, like Mario Party, Mario Kart, those games are fun online. They're perfectly fun to play by yourself, but they're most fun when you've got four people on a couch, kind of jostling each other with controllers, bitching at each other, complaining about the inherent unfairness of Mario Party games. That's where it's most fun.
Yeah.
I can see when this game comes out, again, some premium kind of funny content playing this game.
Oh, 100%. I think for sure you'll see at least a kind of funny stream where we're playing this game and probably having a blast. And if this game sticks, right, if it works well, I could see it being the first step into what you're talking about, Gary, where, hey, like, this could work well as a battle royale. This could work well if we make it bigger and we actually try to do the Fall Guys thing. And of course, it's Nintendo, so they won't do the Fall Guys thing, right?
They would make it their own. Yeah.
Yeah. And that's like, I mean, it's part of what we love and also can't stand about Nintendo is the fact that they never do the obvious thing, right? They never go the obvious route. They always had to find a way to find a twist or find some way to subvert our expectations. They always find a way, yeah. And a lot of that time that leads to strokes of genius. And a lot of times it leads to weird Nintendo decisions where we're like, oh, why would you do this? Like, the answer is right there. Why would you go the left direction? And that's just Nintendo. But I'm very excited to see how this lands.
No, I was glad to see it. Just in terms of the bigger picture, I was in a Discord chat with some friends yesterday, and we were talking about how, like, somebody said there's nothing really coming out between now and the end of the year that I'm super excited about. And I'm thinking, like, what am I excited about? And there isn't really that much. Like, I wonder if this is going to be kind of a lean... If the back half, you know, sometimes the gaming years always tend to be like feast or famine, right? There are years when it's like, oh my God, too many games. I think we had, like, the last few years have been like, oh my God, there's too much stuff coming out in the fourth quarter. How am I going to keep up with all of these games? This year doesn't feel, I don't know about you, blessing me, it doesn't feel that way to me. Yes, there's Ragnarok. I personally am not super excited about that only because I never finished the first one. I want to go back and finish the first one to see if I can get excited about diving into Ragnarok. But the only thing that I can think of that I'm really genuinely excited to play is Stray, which I have like a weird affection for. I think Stray is going to be fantastic. But now this, as soon as I saw this as one, I was, oh, finally something else to get excited about.
Yeah, I mean, the rest of this year, it's an interesting year. For me, it's still exciting. And it's funny enough, this was the question I have in post-show for you is, what is Gary looking forward to for the rest of the year? So we can deep dive even more there. But as I look through, I have my Super Blessing Super Fun Game release calendar that I post on Twitter every now and then. And I look through it. And for me, it is September and October, where things really hit in terms of volume. But then, you know, November, we're going to get God of War Ragnarok, and then Pokemon Scarlet, and then December, we're getting Callisto Protocol. And those seem to be the games for those months. But you go to September, and it is Last of Us Part 1. It is Splatoon 3. Metal Hellsinger, I'm really looking forward to. Mm-hmm. And then I'm kind of looking forward to this game, Valkyrie Elysium. I want to at the very least check that out. That's like a smaller JRPG coming out of Square Enix. Then I look into October, and it is Overwatch 2 coming through October 4th with the multiplayer there. Marvel's Midnight Suns, which I think looks pretty interesting. Plague Tale Requiem coming through in October as well. Scorn, High on Life, which I'm really looking forward to, as somebody who I like Rick and Morty a lot, and I like Justin Roiland and the games that he's made before. And then it is Gotham Knights, Call of Duty Modern Warfare 2, and then the Resident Evil DLC. And so juggernauts, but it is like things that are speaking to different people in different ways.
Now, I was going
to
say, bear in mind, you mentioned hardly any indie games there at all, but there's great indies coming up as well. I'm actually thinking year, in that, given that there is, like, again, it's just me personally, right? I'm not super excited about the next Modern Warfare. There are other games coming up that I think a lot of people will be really excited about. Like, a ton of people obviously are excited about Ragnarok. It's just because I never really finished the first one, I don't feel invested enough to really shoot, like, oh my God, day one. I might get there by November if I go back and finish the first game. But I kind of feel like, for me personally, this year, it's going to be indies that get me through. Like, if there's a lean period, it's going to be either going back into the backlog and playing a bunch of, like, bangers that I never got to and it's still sitting there shaming me, or or indies, because I feel like this is actually going to be a really good year for indies.
Well, I mean, that's where I get into August. I think August is a very exciting time for that, and a bit of like late this month too, because you know, you mentioned Stray, right? Stray is coming out on the 19th, and that's going to be, I think, a strong indie. August has Cult of the Lamb, which a lot of people are looking forward to, and that game looks rad as hell. As far as indies, it also has Rollerdrome, which I'm really looking forward to. I think that game looks really cool. That's the arena shooter skating game that's coming to PlayStation. You have Midnight Fight Express, which also really looks cool. It's another beat-em-up style game with a top-down kind of isometrics point of view. And then, not indie, but a little bit lower-key, Soul Hackers 2. That's another one that looks dope as hell. JRPG coming out of Atlas, which has some Persona vibes. And Gary, I know you like Persona a lot.
Love Persona 5, yeah.
Soul Hackers 2 might be one for you to look out for, because it has some of that vibe and energy. Again, same developer, has a art style evoking that a little bit. Cool soundtrack. It not as high budget and not as like, doesn't have the production value of a Persona, but I think it might still scratch that same itch if you are looking for something along those lines. And then also Saints Row. Like, Saints Row is coming out in August, and that's one that I'm looking forward
to. I'm really in two minds about Saints Row. I want to believe.
I want to believe too, Gary.
But I just kind of feel like so that,
because I love me some Saints Row.
That very particular, I was thinking about this yesterday, because I made this huge mistake. I've been very nostalgic about World of Warcraft lately for some reason. I used to be a hardcore World of Warcraft player back in the day. Right up until, I think, Cataclysm was the last expansion. That was when I dropped out. But like, from the original launch and beta all the way through Cataclysm, I was in a hardcore raiding guild. I played 10, 12 hours a day. I had a big problem with it. And to this day, it's still like some of my fondest memories are like raiding with my guild. And I have a lot of fond memories of World of Warcraft. But I've always promised myself I would never go back. And I don't know why, but I was looking at some World of Warcraft content on YouTube the other day, and it made me really super nostalgic. I was like, you know what? I haven't logged into Warcraft in probably 10 years. I wonder if my character is still there. And I logged in and he's still there. I was like, oh my God. But like, even just reinstalling the game made me feel like you're going back down a rabbit hole that you really don't want to go down. So I immediately kind of uninstalled it again. And I've completely lost track of the point I was trying to make.
I think you're talking about Saints Row being archaic.
Yes. And so that was, yes, thank you. So that was the similar. So Saints Row is another similar thing where like, I feel like I loved Saints Row, because somebody said to me, like, dude, even if you go back to World of Warcraft now, it's not the game you remember. Like, it's changed so much. Like, you won't recognize it. And I wonder if that's going to be the case. Like, I totally understand why, like, the games that we loved back then, you know, the original Saints Row, particularly 3 and 4, it would be hard to make Saints Row 5 in exactly the same kind of tone and comedic style that they did 3 and 4, because, you know, we've moved on, and I think a lot of things would be considered cringy and inappropriate now. We don't laugh at the same things that we laughed at even, you know, 10, 15 years ago. So, you know, Saints Row has to move with the times, and I get that. But I just kind of feel like it can't possibly match the nostalgia and the memories and the fondness I have for Saints Row 3 and 4, which are among the most fun gameplay experiences I've ever had. In particular, 3 and 4 and all the DLC, just so much fun, so much fun. And that first trailer they put out really did kind of feel like, I don't know, like Saints Row. But, you know, like when... like when your parents first showed up on Facebook and it's like, oh, it's over. Like, that's kind of what it feels like for Saints Row now.
You feel like they're trying to step into an era that they don't belong in.
It feels a little bit, how do you do, fellow kids? And I, again, it's hard to say until we actually play it. I don't think they can recapture the same magic. The question is, can it be something else on its own terms, which is equally good, but again, I think many of us that are expecting to like recapture those classic Saints Row vibes that we remember, that's not going to happen.
That's why I'm excited to see how it lands, because, you know, they're rebooting it. It is not the same characters, not the same story.
There's no Johnny Gat,
No Johnny Gat, which I know for a lot of people is like, but that is Saints Row. You know, those characters.
Right, exactly. That's what I'm saying. I think for a lot of people, they're not going to be able to connect with this new one.
Yeah, but I am excited to see if them rebooting it allows them to reinvent that tone and figure out how to be funny and how to be goofy, crazy Saints Row in 2022. And then also if they're able to recapture that gameplay, because I am looking forward to the gameplay experience even more than the rest of it, more than anything, because we don't get as many open world, debauchery, chaotic, open world city, third person action games anymore, right? Like the days of the GTA clones have kind of gone. We of course still have GTA 5 because GTA Online is still trucking, but even, you know, the last big GTA game release was in 2013, and the next one isn't even announced. Right. And when you look at the list of open world games, right, again, so few of them are that type of GTA clone open world. And if Saints Row is able to bring that back and make it a, hey, we're just here for the fun, right? We know what you like in terms of the, what was it called? Something fraud, the, when you're like trying to cause as much chaos as possible on the streets, right?
Yeah,
like
yeah,
the
different
modes. You know what I'm talking about if you play Saints Row. We're trying to bring that back. We're trying to bring in like the crazy vehicles. We're trying to bring in like cool systems driven gameplay where it is you in a car, you like evacuate from your car, or like, you know, you bounce out of your car into a parachute type deal, and you're just exploring a city at your own pace.
Oh my God, you remember? It's funny. So many people remember, like, you talk about, like, what are the gaming moments you remember, right? And people talk about, like, crossing into Mexico for the first time in Red Dead Redemption. We've all got those, like, famous moments. Jumping out of that helicopter with Kanye playing in the background is, to me, is one of the all-time bangers.
If they're able to get those moments, I think it could reclaim that banger status that it had. It is going to be difficult for it. And also, somebody in chat mentioned insurance fraud. That is what I was looking for.
Insurance fraud. Yeah, that was how much damage can you cause? Yeah.
Yeah, like, I fucking love that shit. And if they're able to bring that shit back for this one, I think there could be something there. But
I'm going to be keeping a close eye on it, and I will play it day one because I want to believe. I just feel like the people, here's the weird thing. I feel like people that have the closest association and the most memory and the most nostalgia of Saints Row are going to be the hardest market for this game. I think people come into it fresh and will just look at it on its own terms. If it's a good game on its own terms, I think people will really go for it. But even if it is a good game on its own terms, I think a lot of people that are looking to recapture that Saints Row vibe from back in the day, that's going to be very, very hard.
Well, Gary, speaking of games we're looking forward to this fall, story number two, The Last of Us Part 1 has gone gold. This comes directly from Naughty Dog on Twitter. They tweeted out this morning, or yesterday, actually. Thrilled to announce The Last of Us Part 1 has gone gold. Congratulations to the dogs and our partners at PlayStation who contributed their passion and talent to the growing world of hashtag The Last of Us. Gary, what are your hype levels for The Last of Us?
For the remake?
For the remake, yes.
I was thinking about this when I saw the news that it went gold yesterday afternoon. I knew that we would be talking about it today, and so I thought about it a little bit. For me personally, the excitement is not super high for a couple of reasons, and I think that one of the to answer the question, because a lot of people are asking this question, like, is The Last of Us the answer to a question that no one asked? Right. That's the thing. It's like, you know, why do this and why do this now? You know, this costs millions of dollars and a team of probably hundreds of people working for years. Why do this when you could do like any number of other things? Like, why remake The Last of Us? Like, what's the answer to that question? How do you justify the existence of this project? And I think that for the most part, yeah, absolutely. Why not? There's a couple of reasons. I think the TV show coming out is going to bring a lot of people into this world. They're going to be excited about, hopefully, because, you know, we hope it will be. Oh, that show was really cool. It was based on a game. Maybe I should go check that out. Well, now the game that you can go check out is going to be like, you know, the fully up-to-date version, and you'll be able to like really get into it, and it won't feel dated. Like, you know, again, even with the PS4 remaster, you know, compared to if Last of Us 2 is now what we're comparing it to, it still looks dated. But I've seen some of the comparisons, and yeah, they really did improve this, you know, immeasurably in some way. So I think that, again, here's the weird thing. Much like Saints Row, I think that this Last of Us Part 1 remaster, remake, I guess it's a full remake more than a remaster, it's going to be more popular and I think have more validity and more appeal for people who have less familiarity with The Last of Us and people who are coming into it for the first time than people who are like really, really familiar with it. Like, for me personally, and again, this is what we've been talking a lot recently about, like, what is the statute of limitations on remakes? Like, how old does a game have to get before it starts to feel valid? Oh, yeah, let's go back and revisit that with a remake. And Last of Us, I kind of feel like it's not that old, right? It's less than 10 years old.
Not at all.
So and we've had at least one remaster plus a sequel plus all these spinoffs. Well, not too many, one spinoff. But the point being, like, is the nostalgia, like, you have to miss something, right, for there to be nostalgia, for you to want to go back to it. And like, have we as gamers, people that played the first one and maybe played the remake as well, the PS4 remaster, have we had enough of a chance to kind of get nostalgic about Last of Us Part 1 that going back is going to feel like, oh yeah, all those classic moments are coming back, but better than ever? I kind of think not. I really do think this is aimed more at new players who are going to be coming in off of the TV show, that maybe are coming in, or maybe they played Last of Us Part 2, maybe they just played it first and are like, oh, I should go back and play the first game and see what this is all about. This is then the better option. And I think for people that want to play like the Last of Us epic, right? Let's play, you want to play 1 and 2 together, to play them back to back for like the full epic experience. This is now a much more valid way to do that, because they brought the graphics up to Last of Us Part Two standards. So the two games actually feel like of a piece, right? Like they could literally do a Last of Us. They might very well do this, right? Imagine a Last of Us epic release that actually has both games kind of fused into one.
I guarantee you there is going to be a Last of Us Part 1 plus Part 2 Director's Cut situation.
Oh, yeah.
I'm sure that'll come in 2023 or 2024, right? I mean, honestly, they could time it with Last of Us Factions that they're going to talk more about next year, right? I think bundling all that into one thing is going to be such a strong approach to do it.
So I think for people that want it, that are coming to this for the first time, and again off the back of the TV show, I think there will be a lot of, and again, just they're going to hype this thing to hell. You know, people are aware. Oh, The Last of Us. Yeah, I heard that was a great game, but I never played it. Oh, there's like a version now that's like all up to date. Sure, I'll give that a try. So I think it's like, yes. Does it answer the question of justifying its own existence? I think absolutely yes. I just think more for new players than for people that played the original one, because again, it's not that old.
Yeah, you know, to answer the question of, you know, am I excited for it, right? Like, I'm less excited for it and more looking forward to it. I'm going to play it and I'm going to have a great time with it. And, you know, I'm glad they're doing it. I would have preferred they remake something else. You know, I don't think Last of Us is a game that necessarily needs a remake. We've talked about this for like the last year. But the fact of the matter is, you know, if you're taking the first Last of Us and making it look on par with Last of Us Part 2, and you're, you know, implementing the power of the SSD, the ray tracing that's available, all that stuff that we have through the PS5. Yeah, no, that's going to be a great remake, right? That's going to be a great remodel of the game. But my anticipation for this is the same as my anticipation for if my landlord came to me and was like, hey, we're going to repaint the walls on Tuesday. I'd be like, all right, cool. Like, my apartment's going to look better, but it's not life-changing to me, right? Like, okay, cool, I'm down for it. Unless my walls look ugly as hell, then maybe I'd be excited for it. But like, you know, this is kind of just business as usual, right? Them looking toward the future, understanding that Last of Us is an IP that they should have iterations of and probably want to continue to update. And then also the TV show bringing in a whole new audience to the IP. Yeah, let's remake the first game that way for the people that watch the TV show on this big platform that might see it for the first time and want to get involved with the thing that inspired it. Cool, we have this easy access to Last of Us Part 1 to play it in a way that feels modern and new.
I mean, listen, Last of Us is clearly one of Sony's like highest tier crown jewels, right? It's, you know, there's Uncharted, there's God of War, there's Last of Us, there's Spider-Man. Like it's one of their like S tier franchises. So they will always, you know, try to, you know, squeeze as much money out of it as they can and also kind of feel like they're doing right by it. And so I think this remake makes a lot of sense. We haven't even touched on, again, I think it'll be really interesting when it comes out, because they've talked a lot about also updating the mechanics, right? Like some of the gameplay. This is something that actually oftentimes gameplay mechanics age even worse than graphics, right? Because we learn much about these, about what works and what doesn't. And again, I haven't gone back and played the original one, but people have told me, and I've read that if you play Last of Us Part 2 and get used to kind of the way it handles kind of gunplay and combat and traversal and stuff, and then go back and play Part 1, you're like, oh yeah, this feels way more primitive. Like, they clearly learned a lot between 1 and 2. If they are also bringing those mechanics up to Last of Us Part 2 levels and kind of retroactively applying everything that they've learned, again, I have no problem with it at all. I know some people have been, oh, why do this? Like, I think there's plenty of reasons to do it. It's just, I think that people that played the first game to death might weirdly be the people that are least likely to want to go back and do it all again.
Gary, I want to hop into story number 3, but before we do, I want to let people out there know about patreon.com/kindoffunnygames, where you can go and get the show ad-free. And speaking of ads, let us tell you about our sponsors.
This episode is brought to you by MeUndies. Are people still trying to make plans with you this summer as if you aren't booked and busy already? But thankfully, MeUndies wants to help make this summer the most comfortable one you will never forget, because when you're living your best life, the last thing you want to worry about is butt sweat. And I know that from experience, but you know what? MeUndies has always been there to help me. I'm always wearing my MeUndies shirts, my lounge pants, my lounge shorts, my undies themselves, the socks. I'm a MeUndies fanboy. Wouldn't have it any other way. I just absolutely love the soft micromodal fabric. Find your ultimate summer comfort in sizes extra small all the way up to 4XL. MeUndies has a great offer for all of you out there. For any first-time purchasers, you can get 15% off. For a limited time, if you sign up for the free to join MeUndies membership, you get 25% off your first membership item. To get 50% off your order, 25% off your first membership item, and 100% satisfaction guarantee, go to MeUndies.com/kindoffunny. That's MeUndies.com/kindoffunny. kinda funny. Shout out to ExpressVPN for sponsoring this episode. When you use the bathroom, you always close the door behind you, right? Well, you don't want random passerbyers looking in on you, so why would you let people look in on you when you go online? Your internet service provider knows every single website you visit. ExpressVPN puts a stop to this. It creates a secure encrypted tunnel between your device and the internet so that your online activity can't be seen by anyone. I use ExpressVPN on all my devices, whether it's my phone, my desktop, everything. Anytime I'm using the internet, just because I am trying to stay as safe as possible. The best part is using ExpressVPN is as easy as closing the bathroom door. You just fire up the app, you click one button and you're protected. It is so easy. It's the biggest button in the world. One click, you're done. So if you're like me and believe your online activity is your business, secure yourself today by visiting expressvpn.com/kindoffunny. You can use our link, expressvpn.com/kindoffunny, and you can get an extra 3 months free. That's expressvpn.com/kindoffunny. Shout out to Athletic Greens for sponsoring this episode. I started taking AG1 because I'm not a big pill guy. I don't want to spend a lot of time on extra things, but I wanted to make sure that I was taking care of my health. Now, I've been using it the last couple months and I love it. It doesn't taste like it's super healthy. It has a fun tropical taste that I actually look forward to in the morning. With one delicious scoop of AG1, you're absorbing 75 high quality vitamins, minerals, whole food source superfoods, probiotics, and adaptogens to help you start your day right. This special blend of ingredients supports your gut health, your nervous system, your immune system, your energy, recovery, focus, and aging. Right now, it's time to reclaim your health and arm your immune system with convenient daily nutrition. It's just one scoop in a cup of water every day. To make it easy, Athletic Greens is going to give you a free 1 year supply of immune supporting vitamin D and 5 free travel packs with your first purchase. All you have to do is visit athleticgreens.com/kindoffunny. Again, that is athleticgreens.com/kindoffunny to take ownership over your health and pick up the ultimate daily nutritional insurance. athleticgreens.com/kindoffunny.
Story number 3, Gary, we got a Power Wash Simulator review roundup for you. Right now, we don't have Metacritic and OpenCritic roundup because there's not enough reviews out there for Power Wash Simulator. But I do have a couple of reviews to pull for you. I want to start off with Jade King at The Gamer, who gave it 4 out of 5 stars and says, Power Wash Simulator is a darling escape into a profession I never knew I had any passion for. I'm not saying I'm about to quit writing and start going to town on my nan's filthy patio, but there's something about living a distant occupation through the medium of video games that pulls you in and refuses to let go. Life is stressful right now, so having a place to set my worries aside and clean up virtual arenas while also giving my own mind a good cleanse is more than welcome, and Future Lab has more than delivered on that grounded fantasy here. And I'm going to hop into Ed Thorne's review at Rock Paper Shotgun, who gave it an unscored review but writes this. Despite all my gushing, the game won't be for everyone. You might not take to what's in the grand scheme of things a quiet, mundane job. No matter how satisfying power washing on the surface might be, jobs can drag on a bit longer than you'd like, as you quite literally miss a bit. Then you have to consult your list, find it, and look for whatever furnishing flashes briefly to draw your attention. Mm-hmm. Sometimes it's really hard to see what's unclean about something that you might think is sparkly white, but the game's progress bar has deemed otherwise. Wildly spraying down something that looks immaculate does make you lose a bit of faith in the simulation, even if it's a lighthearted one. But issues with the game are small in comparison with the true satisfaction and serene spaces it provides. While not everyone will get on with its brand of manual labor, it's a simulator for the everyman. Gary, I know, or I think you've been looking forward to Power Wash Simulator. Is that correct?
Well, I mean, I was going to say I totally concur with those reviews, and I think they're largely on the money because I don't know how many. Well, I'll tell you right now. Let's see how many hours I have in Power Wash Simulator. I've been playing it since it first hit early access. It's one of my favorite games. I have 29 hours in Power Wash Simulator, which is really not that. I actually thought it would be more, but I played it a lot on stream. I've been playing it ever since it was in early access, and they recently added the multiplayer. I think it's finally going 1.0 this week, and it's hitting the consoles. This is why the reviews are now dropping, but it's been in early access for a while. And they've been adding content, various different content drops. And it is, like, again, to just echo those reviews, it is a ton of fun. I think, you know, now more than ever, there is a need for games where you can just kind of like chill out and relax and zone out, listen to a podcast, and just, you know, there's no time limit, there's no time pressure, there's no real kind of competitive aspects. You can just kind of relax, you know. It's just there is something often very relaxing in the mundanity of a chore, right? Which you know you can complete if you just put enough time in. And there, you know, and if you've ever used, have you ever used a power washer in real life, Blessing? It's very satisfying.
I've not.
It's very satisfying stripping all the filth off of something and seeing all the clean surface underneath. And the game actually mimics that really, really well. And it's particularly fun in multiplayer. And I do agree with that one criticism that some of the later levels, it's like, oh my God, how long is this going to take? Like, it's going to take hours to clean off. Like, there's a whole underground subway station that takes a really long time to do. I think some of those later levels are really designed more for groups where you can do it more quickly if, like, you know, you break into different sections and divide up the work. But yeah, some of the later levels can be frustrating where there's like one tiny little piece of grime somewhere on the underside of a banister that you've got to like manually go find before the game deems it to be 100% complete. And those moments can be frustrating. But for the most part, I honestly can't recommend Power Wash Simulator. Wow. People have laughed. Oh, what, like, it's pressure washing? Like, it seems like a silly idea for a game. But it's actually absolute genius. And it's very, very calming and very relaxing. And sometimes that's what you want, right? You don't always want, you know, like sweaty, you know, Elden Ring boss battles or, you know, hyper-competitive battle royale. Like, sometimes you just want to chill with a game. And this game really, really delivers that experience. Like, just sit back, no pressure. Well, I mean, obviously there is pressure, but not the kind that's going to stress you out.
That was really good, game. That was really good.
No, it's fun. It's a ton of fun, and I honestly can't recommend Power Wash Simulator enough. People always think we're joking about it, but no, it's genuinely super fun game.
Yeah. No, I mean, I think these games, whenever I read through Out Today or just read through a list of games that are coming out, right, I'm always fascinated by the simulators that pop up. And I remember, like, back in the day, I guess, when simulators first started becoming more and more popular, like, when they started becoming extremely popular, I want to say, like, farming simulators were the ones, and the truck driving simulators were the ones that first started to come to extreme prominence. And I remember being so confused. I was like, who's out here just wanting to realistically farm? Who's out here wanting to just drive a truck? And then as time passed,
no, there's a massive market for it.
Yeah, that's what I learned, is that, like, no, the answer is a lot of people. Like, a lot of people want to just do a lot of mundane tasks because I think so much of it is just rooted in escapism and doing something that you usually wouldn't do. Like, I would never drive a truck. What if I want to drive a truck?
No, I'm telling you. And even like, you know, people that you think of as like hardcore gamers that wouldn't usually touch a game like this, like, really enjoy it. I remember Wario64 tweeted something about Power Wash Simulator being on a Steam sale recently. And he mentioned that it was compatible with the Steam Deck. And there's something about the tone of his email that I thought maybe he was like kind of like making us like a sly dig. Mm-hmm. At Power Wash Simulator. I was like, I replied to him and said, I hope you're not, like, you know, poking fun at Power Wash Simulator, because that game's actually fucking legit. And he tweeted back, no, I'm really into it. And he showed me a picture of like his screen page where he had like Steam page where he had like 50 hours in. I'm telling you, people love Power Wash Simulator.
What is
it's a ton of fun.
You've played like lawn mowing simulators, and you played quite a few other sims, correct?
I played the lawn mowing one, didn't quite do it for me, but a house flipper is another one, you know, where you can just kind of just chill, and it's fun just to decorate and hang wallpaper and put trash into bags. There is just something very, especially if you have a certain kind of OCD personality like me. Like, I don't like clutter. Like, I have, like, my desk has to be like nice and neat and squared away, and I don't like clutter on my desktop. I like things to be kind of orderly and neat and tidy. So any kind of game that lets you go in and like clean the dirt off of something, or like pick up trash, like, I know, again, it sounds ridiculous, right? Like, who knew that in 2022 we'd be excited about games where you pick up trash? But it scratches an itch that a lot of us have, where we want order, we want to clean things, we want to feel like, we want a sense of accomplishment, you know, and these games deliver that. There's a particular kind of endorphin hit that these games give you that other games don't.
Mm. I mean, would you say Power Wash is high on that hierarchy then of the simulators that you've enjoyed?
Absolutely, yeah. To me, it's the grandmaster of those games.
Wow, hell yeah. Story number 4, Square Enix says Final Fantasy VII Rebirth is PS5 exclusive because of the SSD speed. This is Tom Ivan at Video Games Chronicle. Square Enix has claimed Final Fantasy VII Rebirth is exclusive to PS5 and skipping PS4, partly because of its desire to exploit the new-gen console's SSD. The first trailer for Final Fantasy VII Rebirth was shown last month, revealing that the game will be part 2 of a planned trilogy. Unlike its predecessor, Final Fantasy VII Remake, which was released for PS4 in 2020 before making its way to PS5 and PC the following year, the second part of the story won't be available for Sony's last-gen console at all. During an interview with Japanese publication Gamer, Rebirth producer Kitase claimed there were several factors involved in the decision not to release the game for PS4. Quote, "It's exclusive to PS5 because of the graphical quality, of course, as well as SSD access speed," he said. Quote, since the adventure unfolds in a vast world after the escape from Midgar, loading stress is an extreme bottleneck. We felt we needed the specifications of PS5 to overcome that and travel the world comfortably, end quote. Xbox Series X and S also use SSD storage, but Final Fantasy VII Remake is yet to release for Microsoft's console, likely due to an exclusivity deal. Kitase also claimed that the game was, quote, proceeding at an astonishingly fast pace for such a large-scale HD title, end quote. He added, quote, making the middle part of a trilogy has its own challenges, but there are plenty of classic second installments in the world of film that are defined by stunning story twists and deeper explorations of their characters. Often, these second installments become a favorite amongst the fans, end quote. Gary, you're a Final Fantasy VII person?
You know, I've never been a Final Fantasy person, but that remake did really interest me. And I keep meaning to, I say this.
You're not gotten around to it yet.
No, I was waiting for that PS5. What was it, like Integrade or whatever they call it? Integrade, the PS5 little glow up that they gave it. And it's been sitting on my PlayStation 5 for a while now. And I think what it is like, again, I'll play my way through so many like little games, like it's something I can knock out in like a few hours. But anything that's like, oh, you know, the epic, you know, 60-hour experience, I just think, oh man, like it just feels like such a big commitment, and they keep putting me off. I do want to do it though, because I feel like I'm just so familiar with, like, I've seen so much of that game, and I'm like, even though I've never played the game, like I know who Tifa is, I know who Aerith is, I know who Cloud is, I know all these characters. Oh, yeah. I see them everywhere all the time, but I've never actually seen them like in context playing the game. So I feel like I just need to knuckle down and do it. But I mean, it looks beautiful, especially on PS5. I do want to get to it. Maybe it'll be the next thing I play. I'm right at the point now where like the door is opening for like what's going to be the next game that I really get my teeth into. Maybe it's that.
It's wild how you mentioned, right? You know who Tifa is, you know who Aerith is, you know, like a lot of the bits of Final Fantasy VII. I was always the same way growing up. I could tell you about the spoilers that happened in Final Fantasy VII. I could sing the tune of Sephiroth's theme, right? Like Final Fantasy VII is one of those, it's on that echelon of pieces of media that transcend. Even if you've not played this thing, you know the story of it. You know, it's kind of like Star Wars or Lord of the Rings, right? Like that level of, I don't know what this is, but I know the big spoiler. You know, it's crazy. It's crazy how like widespread, I guess, Final Fantasy VII is in that essence.
I mean, it's the most famous of all the Final Fantasy games, wouldn't you say?
Oh, 100%. Yeah, I mean, that's why it's spun off into its own franchise practically, and we're getting what, a Final Fantasy VII release a year at this point.
Well,
right?
I mean, that's the other thing that puts me off a little bit. Is it not only like how long do you think it? So this new Final Fantasy VII that came out a while ago and got that PS5 upgrade. Mm-hmm. How long do you think it takes to play through that entire story campaign?
I mean, if you're including the DLC, probably like 40 to 45 hours. Just
so that that's a good. Yeah, that, you know, it's probably at least a couple of weeks of gaming, maybe more, given like how many hours of gaming I can. Spend in a given week or an evening or whatever. And then it's not even the entire game, right? Like it's just the first chunk of the original Final Fantasy VII, right?
Oh, yeah.
Do we know yet like how many of these remakes it's going to take to, it's three, right? To do the entire game.
It's a trilogy and there are spinoffs. God. Like Crisis Core is coming out this winter, quote unquote. And right. That's going to be that's part of the Final Fantasy VII story, but it's not part of the main trilogy.
Rogue
One is the Star Wars.
All right, so answer this question for me without hopefully giving me any spoilers. Mm-hmm. Given that Final Fantasy VII Remake isn't the entire game from back in the day, but just that first chunk of it, like the first act or whatever, when I play through it and get to the end and I've devoted 45, 50 hours into it, am I going to feel like I had a complete meal? Like, is it going to feel there's some resolution, or is it going to be like, oh God, now I got to wait for the next chapter to see what happens next?
Resolution is a whole other thing, but yes, it 100% is a full game. It has an ending. In fact, I would say that the ending is satisfying and gets you excited for the next one. Like they're turning one Final Fantasy game from the 90s into this big trilogy. And I would almost say that Final Fantasy VII, the original, is more like, it's more like an adaptation, right? Like this feels as if they're taking that and turning it into a whole bigger thing with more details, more exploration, expanded characters, right? All this stuff. Final Fantasy VII Remake for sure feels like a full game. You're not going to feel cheated out of your $60 or $70.
I think I finally got to bite the bullet and do it. It feels like two. It's too big. Again, Final Fantasy in general, but also particularly this one, just feels, it's too big a chunk of like gaming culture for me to have like no real perspective on it at all. Cause like, I've never really played a Final Fantasy game. It's just something that completely missed me. But it's like, I felt the same way. I never played a Yakuza game for the longest time, but then I played one. I was like, oh my God, like where have these games been all my life?
I think you like Final Fantasy VII. You know, okay. I think the characters in Final Fantasy VII Remake especially are so well explored and so well expressed. I think the performances are so good.
I mean, the graphics are incredible, right?
Are incredible. There's always one scene that I replay in my mind from that game where like things are going to shit. And there's no spoilers. And there's one character named Barrett, right? Not Barrett Courtney, but Barrett from Final Fantasy VII, who like the way he emotes because he cares about somebody, and like you see it in his face, and he's like fucking like he's like, I need to find this person. That shit, oh, I replay that shit all the time in my head because for me that was one of the moments of the year. Like I connected to that so hard. And I think Final Fantasy VII has a lot of moments of like magic like that where you're like, oh man, this is incredible. I can't believe they're taking it here emotionally with the story in the characters.
Did you say it is coming to Xbox?
No. So Final Fantasy VII Remake and Rebirth aren't coming to Xbox, at least as of now. They're not announced for Xbox. Crisis Core is, which again is the spinoff. It's kind of a weird situation. But at this moment, no, they're not coming to Xbox. Okay. And Rebirth is only going to be PS5, assumingly because the SSD and they're taking advantage of the technology of new gen consoles, which I think sounds cool. I'm very much down for Rebirth. Seems like it's going to be more open because we're not past the beginning hours of Final Fantasy VII, the original, and so you're stepping into Midgar, the open world. And so them talking about how they're taking advantage of the technology to make that work for me is exciting, and I can't wait for it. And I can't wait to see how better this game looks than even Final Fantasy VII Remake. I'm very hyped for this.
I mean, I was literally going back to what we were saying earlier about how, you know, the back half of the year might be a little bit quiet for me in terms of like those big AAA experiences. Like, again, I'll play the indies and but every now and again, what's like the next big, you know, thing for me to really get my teeth into. And I mentioned I may have to kind of go to the backlog. Like maybe this is the game to dust off to feel like you're having that, like you've got a AAA experience.
Oh yeah, dude, get to it. Definitely add it to the list. It's one, the fact that you like Persona, you like Yakuza, I think Final Fantasy VII Remake is a shoe-in for you to enjoy. For now, though, let's round out the Roper Report with story number 5. Supermassive has been acquired by Nordisk Games. This is Ryan Dinsdale at IGN. Supermassive Games, the developer behind Until Dawn, the Dark Pictures Anthology, and The Quarry, has been acquired by Nordisk Games. Part of the larger Nordisk film brand, the Denmark-based entertainment company owns a handful of other game developers, including Avalanche Studios, the creator of Just Cause. As reported by GamesIndustry.biz, Nordisk Games acquired a 30.7% in Supermassive in March last year, but announced in a blog post that it now wholly owns the studio. Quote, having had such a positive experience over the past year, it wasn't a difficult decision when Nordisk Games wanted to explore increasing their investment, said Supermassive CEO Pete Samuels. Quote, we have an exciting and ambitious growth strategy for Supermassive Games, and Nordisk Games ownership only enhances that, end quote. The acquisition shouldn't negatively impact the development of Supermassive's games, with a new Dark Pictures game, The Devil in Me, the only one we know to be in development. And Nordisk also made it clear it wants the studio to continue its story-focused style of games. Gary, did you get to play The Quarry?
Oh, yeah. In fact, I would say that off the back of playing The Quarry over the past couple of weeks, my wife and I, we played it on the couch. We tried out that couch co-op mode. And it's actually quite clever. You can have up to, I think, like
eight people.
And you basically, you know, you assign which characters you want to play, right? So like player one will be Abby or whatever, player two will be Jacob, you know, and as the character chapters come up, like you pass the controller to the relevant person. And we, you know, we broke it because it's eight main characters in the game, right? And it's like half boys, half girls. And so Leah played all the female characters and I played all the male characters, and we had the controllers going back and forth over the course of, again, we don't get to play for more like an hour or two a night. So it took us the better part of like 2 weeks, I think, to play through everything. But I had a ton of fun with it. And Supermassive, off the back of The Quarry, I think, has become one of my favorite developers. Like, they're so good at what they do. It's a very, very specific thing that they do, right? These kind of, you know, narrative, story focused, you know, high production value horror games. But they're so good at it, right? Like the facial capture is amazing. Graphically, the polish, these games are so beautifully polished. I think they're relatively well directed, well written, you know, better than most video games, at least. They really do capture that kind of classic horror movie feel. They're, you know, for the most part, fun to play. I think it's debatable, like, how much game there really is there. You know, like, there's a lot of, you know, you can play the quarry for a long time without ever having to really do much of anything. But when, but you never feel like you can put the controller down, right? Because you never know when the game might suddenly say, oh, you better do something quick, you know? So you're always, like, kind of leaning in and engaged. I thoroughly, thoroughly enjoyed it. I was really, really impressed with all of the kind of production values of it across the board as a piece of kind of like interactive cinematic storytelling. Again, not very gamey, but I don't really care about that. All I really care about is like, did I have a good time playing it? And Leah and I, like Leah in particular, she was like every day, she was like, oh, we're going to play the quarry again tonight. I really want to see what happens next. And so it totally got its teeth into us. We enjoyed it a lot. It's really made me want to now go play the Dark Pictures games that I've kind of slept onto.
Hell yeah.
Like we've got House of Ashes installed. We might
Hell yeah. next,
and maybe even go all the way back to it. I'm going to see if Leah might be interested in looking at it Until Dawn, because I still have that on PlayStation 4 somewhere in my library. We just need to reinstall it. So yeah, really, really big fan of Supermassive. Great team out of the UK. And I'm really looking forward. I'm hoping that this acquisition means that they'll go on, you know, to be able to do even bigger and better things.
Yeah, and I think that's going to be the case. You know, the statements that both Nordisk and then also Supermassive put out seems like they have a really good understanding of what each other wants, right? Especially Supermassive as a studio continuing to make these types of games. And another thing they noted in one of the quotes was that, hey, this allows us security, right? This allows us to continue to do what we do and not have to worry about putting out a game that's a dud and then end up not being able to make games anymore because we're not making enough money. The fact that they're now owned by Nordisk, I think, puts them in that comfortable place. And yeah, like, Gary, I'm right there with you, right? Supermassive, the more games they put out, the more I love them. And The Quarry, I think, really cemented that for me, where the Dark Pictures Anthology really took a while to kind of get its footing in and actually start to put out good games. And for me, House of Ashes was the first one that really hit. Like, I thought Man of Medan was like very mid, and I also thought Little Hope was like, eh, it was fine, it wasn't that great. House of Ashes, I think, is legitimately good. And then The Quarry, I think, is back to being, oh, this is the great. This is, we're back in that great stage that I want from the developer of Until Dawn. And you know, talking about gameplay, right? Like, you know, Choose Your Own Adventure, I think, does, that is gameplay of itself. Being able to choose, figure out what direction you want to go. Even, I know QuickTime events get dogged on all the time. And I kind of get that for action games like God of War or whatever. But in a game like this where it is horror, anybody can die.
Yeah.
Like, you want to be on the edge of your seat and you want to be like on edge the whole
time.
Yeah. I think it works.
Listen,
super
I mean,
well.
It really, The Quarry is barely a game in the traditional sense, right? Mm-hmm. But also, I would also say, I don't care. Right. Like, or like it's a hybrid form of entertainment. All I care about is as I sit in front of the TV with a controller in my hand, like on a Friday night for 3 hours, am I having a good time? And like at no point during, I don't know what it was, the 10, 12 hours it took us to play The Quarry, were we not having a good time? It's a blast.
100%. I was just having this conversation with Janet, I want to say last week. And I was telling her, I think like the Choose Your Own Adventure story narrative games might be one of my favorite genres.
I love them.
You know, between The Quarry, between Dark Pictures, between, you know, even I remember Detroit Become Human back in the
day. I love Detroit because I know it got a lot of shit, but I really enjoyed it.
Yeah, like Quantic Dream games tend to get a lot of shit. And I understandably so, because I think a lot of the time the stories can be dog shit at times. Mm-hmm. But I came out of Detroit being like, yo, I love the gameplay of Detroit and like the visuals and all that stuff. But like the way that the butterfly effect really does span out and you can really decide a lot of the fates of the characters and the stories and how the stuff goes, that is an art of itself, and it's tough to get down. It's tough to do well a lot of the time, and I think fewer developers do it well, and I think the Supermassive is one of the developers that do it well. And then you have others, right? I recommended to you, I forget the name of the game, but it was one of the Wales Interactive games, FMV, where it's like a battle royale on a beach.
Oh god, no.
Shit.
I played that. I still have a bone to pick because it was awful.
But like, that's how much I enjoy that kind of game where
was it called, like, Blood Beach
awful,
or what was it called? Ooh. It was terrible.
Blood. You didn't like Blood
Beach?
It was
so bad.
Gary,
it was like one of those Sci-Fi Channel original movies.
Blood Sport is someone in the chat. Is that it?
Yeah, I think Blood. I don't know.
No, it was called like Bloodshore or something like that.
Bloodshore. It was Bloodshore.
Bloodshore.
Me, Kevin, and Mike had a blast.
See, the difference is when you play something like The Quarry, it's actually directed by someone who knows how to direct, and it's written and acted by people who know how to do those things.
Really hurtful.
Whereas Bloodshore was not.
We don't know.
Bloodshore was definitely
that,
on another
that was
level.
His vision, you know? Maybe that was
but I think that's just the fun of those games. Sometimes those games are very fun even when the story is bad. And sometimes even because
for sure.
The story
but
is bad.
But I think they're better when those elements are done with some degree of competency. The only thing I want to say about The Quarry, just my own personal experience with it, is Leah actually wants to go back and redo some stuff because, you know, so 100, I read up yesterday, 168 different possible endings, right, in terms of the combinations of who lives and who dies. Mm-hmm. We got, like, of all 168 possible endings, we got what I am certain I would put as, like, my 168th least favorable ending that we could have got.
No.
Because, like, you know how, like, early in the game you start to develop, like, you immediately, part of the fun of the game, right, especially you were sitting around with other people, is, like, I don't like him, I like her. You know, like, you instantly kind of get, like, a vibe on the different characters, and different people like different, like or dislike different characters. I've decided fairly early on who I liked and who I wanted to survive and who I didn't like and wouldn't care if they died. By the time it was over, the only two people that survived were the people that I liked by far the least. And the two people that I wanted to survive the most had the absolute worst deaths. And it was like, oh my God, like, you do kind of want to go back and replay it and get a better ending.
It's such a gut punch when somebody you like, your favorite character, dies halfway.
Oh, especially when it's because you screwed up. Like, in my case, I killed Caitlyn. Caitlyn was my favorite character because she was the only one that was in any way fucking competent. And I got her killed because, like, when I had to use the shotgun, I panicked and was, like, wiggling the wrong thumbstick and I didn't shoot in time. And she got horribly, horribly eaten by this monster. And I wanted to apologize to the character. I felt bad that I got her killed.
So you can tweet at Brenda Song, let her know, like, hey, my bad.
Yeah, I'll let her know.
Gary, I can't wait to see when the nukes, I can't even think about where I want to transition. I can't wait for the next Supermassive game. I want to see when the nukes drop. I can't wait for the next Supermassive game, The Devil in Me. But the release of that is just so far away. If I want to know what's coming out to Mom and Grop shops today, where would I look?
The official list of upcoming software on each and every platform, as listed by the Kinda Funny Games Daily show hosts each and every weekday.
Out today, we got Garden Story for Xbox Series X and Xbox One, Time on Frog Island for PS5, Xbox Series X, PS4, Xbox One, Switch, and PC, Apex Legends Mobile Season 2, Distortion for mobile, Croot the Mythic Wings for PS5, Xbox Series X, PS4, Xbox One, Switch, and PC. Fist Forged in Shadow Torch for Switch. Long Live the Queen for PS5, PS4, Xbox Series X, Xbox One, Switch, and PC. And then Excel for PC. That is X-E-L, not Excel. X-E-L for PC. New days for you. Excel is coming to Switch on July 14th in a couple of days. The Deal Field Chronicles is coming to PS4, PS5, Switch, Xbox Series X, Xbox One, and Steam in the US on September 22nd. And then Pusheen and Super Pusheenicorn skins are coming to Fall Guys this week for 800 show bucks each. So if you're a big Pusheen fan, hell yeah, get hyped for that.
What is Pusheen?
Pusheen is like another Hello Kitty.
Okay.
Like one of those brands that people really love. Deal of the day for you. Amazon Prime members can now claim over 30 free games until July 13th, including Mass Effect Legendary Edition, Grid Legends, Need for Speed Heat, Star Wars Jedi Academy, Star Wars Jedi Knight 2, Jedi Outcast, and Star Wars Republic Commando.
Some good games on that list for free games.
Yeah, no, get on that. And that's today and tomorrow that you can do
that. Is that part of Prime Day? Because I remember looking at the list going, wow, those are like better games than you would usually expect to get for free on Prime. But it's also Prime Day when you get all the big discounts. So I'm wondering if it's part of that.
Oh, yeah. It 100% okay. is part of Prime Day. Yeah. That's been like, we've been doing the activation for it because I think we're sponsored for that. And so we've been shouting that out every day. So as a reminder, go get you some free games. Freeloading. Now it's time for kindoffunny.com/you're wrong, where you write in, let us know what we got wrong as we got it wrong so you can correct it. We can correct it for those watching later on youtube.com/kindoffunnygames and later listening on podcast services around the globe. Okay, I'll take that. Kebab says, breaking news, the Delicious Last Course has already sold 1 million copies. So there you go. I don't know if that would have made the
Wait, sorry, what sold 1 million copies?
Cuphead, the DLC.
Oh, wow, good for them.
Yeah. Now it's time for me to let you know about tomorrow's host. Tomorrow you're getting me and Janet on Kinda Funny Games Daily. If you watch this live on Twitch, after this is a sponsored Amazon stream featuring Andy playing some Mass Effect. If you want to catch that stream later, you can subscribe to youtube.com/kindoffunnyplays. Remember, this has been Kinda Funny Games Daily, each and every weekday live right here on twitch.tv/kindoffunnygames. We run you through the nerdy news you need to know about. We have a Patreon post show for those that are subbed at the silver level of patreon.com/kindoffunnygames, so stick around for that. Otherwise, until next time, Game Daily.